You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci with the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. And we're talking some fantasy baseball on the program today. George Kurtz will join us. We'll run through tonight's slate. Some interesting conversations to be had as far as today's baseball slate from a DFS perspective. Most notably, do you or don't you own Clayton Kershaw tonight? I say no. I say it's not worth it. I say that there's other guys on the board that we can take tonight. Let's see what George Kurtz has to say about it. George, a big hockey guy as well. I saw that the hockey world was waiting with bated breath with every useless, stupid player that was protected or unprotected over the weekend. Nevertheless, the Vegas hockey team's finally going to come together on Wednesday. It's interesting. And to me, I don't like it. We're going to get to this with Kurtz, but I don't like the backroom shenanigans that are going on with this stuff. Well, he's unprotected, but we're going to cut a deal with him not to take him. And, you know, it seems like Bettman's just bending over backwards here to let Vegas do whatever the hell they want to do. Meanwhile, Quebec City's got an empty freaking arena. You're a stupid idiot, Gary Bettman. All right, anyways, I'm all upset now, Bettman. Bettman! Like, ugh. All right. What else is going on? Oh, NBA draft rapidly approaching. NBA draft rapidly approaching. Brooks Koepka cashes at 40-1. And if you tuned in to Red Heat and Rage Radio, you cash this. And in fact, on Red Heat and Rage Radio, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 10 o'clock Eastern, the media camp should be rich. We're not. It just shows how dumb we are. On this radio show, the Friday night before the Kentucky Derby, I gave you the winner. The Friday night before the Preakness, Cam gave you the winner. The Friday night before the Belmont, we both gave you the winner. And Wednesday night before the U.S. Open, Cam gave you Brooks Koepka. It's unbelievable. It's four times in a row here. Not too bad, man. Producing winners, it pays to tune into the Fantasy Sports Network. All right, Steve Merrill's going to join us. We're going to talk baseball from a betting standpoint today. We'll talk some NASCAR. Kyle Larson did not pay 40-1 yesterday, but, man, this son of a bitch owns the two-mile tracks right now, doesn't he? And as you can see, I'm rocking an old-school Buffalo Bills, Jim Kelly jersey. We're on to our third team today. We're through the Patriots, who I said over 12.5. Well, we did the Dolphins on Friday on Unfiltered. I said under 7.5. Buffalo Bills season win total is 6.5, and I'll give you my thoughts on a Buffalo Bills schedule and the prospects of the upcoming 2017 season. Well, the NBA draft is now just 3 days away, and the dealing has begun. Dealing Danny Ainge. This guy cuts more deals than Omar on the Wire ever did. And, you know, the Philadelphia 76ers, similar to the Chicago Bears, push the panic button as the Philadelphia 76ers swap the third pick with the Boston Celtics for their first pick. And oh yeah, the Celtics get Philadelphia's first round pick next year. Like, for the love of God, this is like The Simpsons, man. This is like The Simpsons with the Krusty burglar. And Homer just beats the crap out of him. Stop, and he's already dead. And I can't take this. I can't take this. As a Toronto Raptor fan, the window's not just closed. The window's like a prison penitentiary window, all right? There's barbed wire and bars on this window right now for the Toronto Raptors. As Dealing Danny Ainge just fleeced the Philadelphia 76ers. And in similar fashion, it's just like the Bears and the 49ers all over again. And I see a lot of people in the media fawning over what Philadelphia did. This isn't trusting the process, what Philadelphia did. This is forcing the process. You were going to get a good player anyways with the third pick. And the fact of the matter is, if you're the Boston Celtics, very similar to the San Francisco 49ers who were going to take Trubisky anyways, the Boston Celtics didn't want Markelle Fultz. They didn't want him. And I don't think the Lakers want him. Therefore, you probably could have got him anyways. Just because all the stupid jackasses in the media have, ooh, Fultz number one on their mock board, Boston didn't want to take him. And it's pretty clear Boston's made their decision. They're keeping Isaiah Thomas right now. They're going to try to bring in Gordon Hayward. And if Gordon Hayward doesn't work, there's rumors they're going to try to get Jimmy Butler. And if that doesn't work, they're going to try to get Blake Griffin. All I know is these guys have like 6 first-round draft picks right now over the next 2 years. It's insanity, man. A team that was first in the Eastern Conference this year, you know, had the first pick. They parlay this into the third pick and another first-round pick. Stop giving them first-round picks. Like, for the love of God, man. Like, Danny Ainge, stop it. It's like Kevin Durant said, it's not my fault these teams keep giving up their picks. And it's true. It's true. Cleveland, you guys are the beast right now, man. I don't know how much time longer it's going to be that Cleveland starts to regress, but a couple of years down the road, how are you going to beat this Boston Celtics team? They have 6 first-round picks. Like, they're already good. They have another 6 over the next 2 years. Every piece of crap team seems to just say, you know what, why don't we give our first-round pick to Danny Ainge for some reason? It's unbelievable to me. Think about, like, the Boston Celtics, what they can look like now. You can have a Jaylen Brown, a Josh Jackson, an Avery Bradley, an Al Horford, a Gordon Hayward, maybe a Blake Griffin, too. You know, and Jaylen Brown's a stud, the kid out of Cal. Josh Jackson's probably the best player on the board, and the Boston Celtics are going to get him with the third pick. It's not as much of a, it's a little different. Markelle Fultz is a bigger slam dunk than Mitch Trubisky is. Trubisky's a little bit of a gamble. Markelle Fultz, not really a gamble, but you didn't have to trade up to get him. And you certainly didn't have to. Even if Markelle Fultz on the Philadelphia 76ers, and I see these dumbasses, ooh, Philadelphia are a big playoff team next year. They're going to be a lottery team again next year. And Boston is going to have their damn pick. Looks like Bill Belichick isn't the only genius in Boston. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I'm Gabe Morenci. George Kurtz will join us in a couple of moments. We'll talk some Major League Baseball DFS, some NHL hockey. Las Vegas Golden Knights set to take shape this Wednesday. A lot of backroom dealings going on. We'll get Meany on the show later in the week because I know Meany's really into this stuff. A couple of interesting names of note, actually. No shock. I guess Bobby Ryan is there for the taking. Will they take him? I don't know. It seems to be a slam dunk that Marc-Andre Fleury is going to be, he's going to be the face of the franchise, so to speak. They seem to be locked in. I don't think they're going to be turning around and flipping Fleury, although they could do that. There's a lot of rumors going on right now in the NHL. Basically, GMs have about 48 hours, and McPhee stated in Vegas, said, you can deal your way out of anything. And he said, before I take any player on any team, I'm going to call you, and I will give you an opportunity. And I guess some teams are taking the opportunity. I think he fleeced Columbus for a 24th overall pick. And it appears as though we were wondering about this, how Vegas was going to approach this. I don't think Vegas wants to be good. You know, it's weird because you can't totally suck, but McPhee's seen the big picture here, rack up the draft picks. So Marc-Andre Fleury is going to be the face of the franchise. We'll break that down. We got a Buffalo Bill season preview. Brooks Koepka gets it done. And Dan Daly gave us Brooks Koepka on Red Heat and Rage Radio, as did the Raging Redhead Cam Stewart as part of his six-pack. Pat Mayo came damn close to a monster payout with Fleetwood Mac in 160 to range. Listen, I thought Matsuyama was a dangerous player coming in here, and I'm kicking myself for not taking the T5 with Matsuyama. Would have been a nice payday. But it is what it is. We got our Buffalo Bill preview. And we've been talking a lot of football over the weekend on our podcast, too. I'm ready for some football talk. I'm enjoying breaking down the teams. Remember, we gave you the Patriots. Patriots over 12.5. Dolphins under 7.5. And stay tuned today to see what I think about the Buffalo Bills. Let's bring Steve Maryland right now. What's going on, Steve?
Hey, Gabe. How you doing?
Always a pleasure, Steve. So you and I don't often talk a lot of golf, but the U.S. Open over the weekend, absolutely amazing that the top three favorites all missed the cut. You know, DJ Johnson was a big favorite, misses the cut. Rory McIlroy was a big favorite, misses the cut. And then Jason Day, they were the three favorites as far as the odds are concerned. They all missed the cut. Brooks Koepka ends up cashing in the 35-40-1 range.
Yeah, I mean, you know, golf is a lot like NASCAR in that you can sometimes, you know, take the long shots and put a few of them on your card there, and if you hit one of them, you pay off big. Wasn't the case with NASCAR this week. Kyle Larson won as a favorite, but very similar. You know, it's a wide open range with players, just like NASCAR. You know, you get these 30-41 long shots that hit a lot of times.
Yeah, NASCAR. Yeah, unfortunately, Kyle Larson did not pay 40-1. Kyle Larson, 6-1, wins Michigan again. I guess we should have known better. The odds just weren't good enough, but this guy's unbelievable. It's like, what is it, the third straight two-mile track he's won? Like, kid's the king of these two-mile ovals right now, man.
I think they're the only three wins he's ever had, correct?
Yeah,
that's what's crazy. But he's finished first or second in 7 of the last 13 races this season, which is, that's insane. He's dominated like Kevin Harvick has dominated the last few seasons. Harvick's not doing it this year. Kyle Larson is the new dominator. And, everyone still thinks Jimmy Johnson's the odds-on favorite to win the chase, though, because he's a veteran. But Kyle Larson's been the driver to beat. Martin Truex Jr. was as strong as anybody again yesterday. Couldn't get it done. Kyle Busch was up there for most of the race as well. And Chase Elliott finished second. Just like last year, he finished second in both Michigan races. He has yet to win, and he has ever in any track in the Cup Series. He's now finished second in three straight Michigan races, so he's getting close.
Yeah, he's finished second three straight times, twice to Kyle Larson. It really is unbelievable. He's knocking on a door. He was only 8-1. It wasn't high enough for us to take him. What's amazing about this, Kyle Larson led more than half the laps in the race, but it's only the fourth time this year in 15 races that the driver that led the most laps actually went on to win the race, which is interesting. You mentioned Martin Truex Jr. Truex Jr., as far as the championship, this guy's really in the mix right now. He finishes in sixth place, but he wins a couple of stages again, Steve. The guy's just racking up the stage wins this year. And all these bonus points, I guess they cross over. It gets complicated when we start breaking down the playoff format. But all these points that he's getting, they cross over into the championship round. So he's just racking up these points. Truex Jr. is going to be in the mix all year long here.
No question about it. And he was the most dominant driver last year in the mile and a half tracks, which make up about half of the races. We talked about it at Charlotte a few weeks ago. His spring race in Charlotte last year was probably the most dominating race of any driver at any track in recent memory. And, this is a guy that has come very close in the championship chase. He can't quite get it done, but he seems to be a little more consistent. Larson's still young. Larson's been the best car, but you just get that feeling that he's still a little young to maybe win the title. And the chase format is so different because it's really a three-race format, then they reset, then a three-race format. Now, of course, when you're finishing first or second in every other race like Larson is, you'll probably be okay with that format. But we'll find out. We got a road course coming up. We got some other different type of tracks in the near future. And I just feel like Truex is a little bit more consistent, and he might be the guy to beat when all is said and done. I think there's actually probably more value with him than anybody else right now in the future odds.
Joe Gibbs Racing is still winless. We talked about Truex. Truex Gibbs shares data with Truex's team, but he's technically not a Joe Gibbs racer. They're still winless right now, which is really surprising, and it's amazing. Kyle Busch this year, Steve, he's led 743 laps, but he hasn't won.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Like 700, like it just goes, it's almost like gambling. And we've all been there. You get in these ruts where like, man, I'm doing everything right. I can't get a break. I keep losing by a half point. I'm losing by a run. And it's one of these deals with Joe Gibbs Racing. Their cars are fast right now. They're not terrible, but they just can't buy a break and they can't win. And that's evident right there. Kyle Busch, 743 laps this year led without a win.
Yeah, and obviously Kenseth is a good driver as well. Denny Hamlin, they don't have wins. Of course, Carl Edwards is gone. Daniel Suarez has not really been close to winning. He's a talented rookie, but he's probably not going to win a race this year. So they are one less car on that team with Carl Edwards gone. But Kyle Busch is the dominant car in this team. He was leading a lot of laps yesterday. He stayed out, took two tires only later in the race and kept the lead and then kind of faded off to about seventh after some cautions late. But he definitely could have won yesterday, and I think he'll probably be the first Gibbs driver to win here in the near future.
We talked about the Michigan race and it being important to the manufacturers, obviously, in the Motor City. What's also interesting here, we talked about Keselowski, this being his home course, and he's never won there before. He ends up finishing 16th. Eric Jones ends up finishing 13th, and I bring Jones up because he's also a Michigan native. And it's interesting, Steve, that no driver born in Michigan has ever won this race before.
Yeah, you think, the home of what, Ford and Chevy or whatnot, so it's like Auto City near Detroit. But you can't think of a lot of drivers probably that are Michigan-type drivers, although Keselowski's from that area. I guess he's not Michigan, though, because I think he's won here. He's been very strong on track. It's a cookie-cutter track, but it's a two-mile like California, as you said. And the usual suspects are going to continue to do well in these tracks. In fact, the results from the last two races at Michigan last year and then this past weekend, Premler is any track on the circuit. The guys that were best in practice times on Saturday were Larson, Busch, Truex, and they dominated and led most of the laps yesterday. So that Michigan is a very good track to handicap. The only thing that gets you sometimes is fuel mileage. And that did not come into play yesterday because of all the late cautions. But that's the only thing that can kind of throw a wrench into the works a little bit. Otherwise, the cream usually rises to the top on all these cookie-cutter tracks.
All right, Steve, so let's talk some baseball. We have Merrill's Major League Baseball Power Poll. Teams that are hot right now, basically everybody in the National League West, it's unbelievable, Steve. The Dodgers are killing it, yet they're not really gaining any ground because Arizona and Colorado keep winning. And I'm not fully surprised by Colorado. Listen, I gave Colorado I only gave three futures win totals. Colorado was one of them. I said Baltimore over 80.5, Colorado over 80.5, and St. Louis over 83.5. So I'm not shocked by Colorado. I'm surprised they're winning as much as they do. Arizona really is surprising me. I still think the Dodgers are the best team in this division, but it's amazing. The Dodgers, like, they're 9-1 in their last 10. They just keep winning basically every day, and they're still battling right now. What a division this is right now.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Colorado's a bit of a surprise for me as well. I've got them still at second in the rankings. I was close to dropping Houston. They've lost 5 of 7, but they got a lot of injuries at pitcher. I still think that's a real talented team. You do get a feeling if you look at this top five right now, Houston, Colorado, L.A., Washington, and New York Yankees, you kind of feel like Colorado's the oddball team that's not going to be there in a month or two. But what's impressing me with them is they're winning on the road this season, and that's something they haven't done in years past. And then let's look at the bottom of that division. The Padres, everyone thought would be the worst team, but the Giants are right now 19.5 games out. That's the biggest deficit of any team in the league in any division, along with the Phillies, who are 19.5 out in the West or in the East. The Giants have just imploded. Now, the Cardinals are having an off season, but the Giants look like they really might be finished.
The D-backs on a 7-game win streak right now. You know, with the Cleveland Indians have won 5 in a row right now. And it looks like they're taking their rightful spot at the top of this division. I didn't think Minnesota could keep this up. You mentioned the Yankees, Steve. Yankees on a 6-game losing streak. Yeah, we'll cut them a little slack. They had a rough time on the West Coast this week. It is what it is. But with that being stated, I still think Boston's a better baseball team than they are. So I would expect – I've been waiting for the Yankees to regress a little bit. They're a solid team. But at the same point in time, I think Boston are a better team. And we see Boston right now. I think they're tied. I think eventually Boston's going to distance himself a little bit. I think Boston's the class of that division.
Well, Boston's an interesting team here. They won 2 out of 3 at Houston this weekend. Obviously very impressive against really the best team in baseball this season. However, the only win the Phillies have in their last 12 games was a 1-0 win against the Red Sox. So Red Sox just took 2 out of 3 on the road against the best team, but they also lost. The only win that the worst team in my power rankings, the Phillies, have had in the past 12 games came against the Red Sox. So shows how they're kind of a Jekyll and Hyde team. And they need to get more out of Rick Porcello. Former Cy Young winner, has an ERA over 5 still for the season. And he just isn't right now. They're going to need him to pick it up as the stretch comes up.
I mentioned the Indians. They've won 5 in a row. But with that being stated, Steve, I don't like the number here tonight. What do you make of this game? Corey Kluber's on the hill. Some impressive numbers for Kluber with Cleveland. They're 21-6 in his last 27 starts. So they generally do win when Kluber's on the hill. Including on the road. I think they're 7-3 the last 10 times he started on the road. The Orioles are fading a little bit. They're 3-7 in their last 10 baseball games. But they do have Dylan Bundy on the hill tonight at +155 for a team at home like Baltimore. It's pretty tempting for me. I'm going to take a shot with the Birds tonight at +155, even though I'm going against Kluber in this spot.
Yeah, and I mean, the over is probably worth a look as well. The reason Baltimore is struggling is their pitching. You know, over that span you mentioned, they've given up 7 runs or more in half of those games. They've given up 10 runs or more in like 4 or 5 games over the past 2 weeks. The pitching's really fallen apart. They've fallen all the way down out of the top 10 in my power ratings after being there most of the season. They live and die by the home run. You know, so if they're hitting the home runs, they can score runs with and trade runs with teams, but they really have struggled to stop anybody. So I think Cleveland will get some offense tonight.
The Mets and the Dodgers, it was -300, and it's gone higher. I've seen 315s and 320s popping up right now on Clayton Kershaw this evening. We're going to talk about Kershaw from a fantasy standpoint with George Kurtz in a couple of minutes, Roto expert, Fantasy Sports Network's very own. But I talked about this with Malinsky last week. Malinsky brought it up, and he's noticing some He's noticing some fatigue with Clayton Kershaw right now. He's not 100% right now. And the Dodgers have to worry about a big pitcher. You know, they probably win tonight. There's no way in hell I'm laying -315 with Kershaw tonight. I'm not really intrigued with the run line here either, but what do you make of this big number with Wheeler on the hill? We should note that Clayton Kershaw is 7-0 in his career against the Mets. He's never lost.
Yeah, Wheeler's in terrible current form. He has a 6.6 ERA in his last three games. So I think that's one of the reasons this line continues to climb. Almost getting into the Floyd Mayweather range. I think I'd rather have Floyd at -600 than Kershaw at -300.
Yeah, me too.
But yeah, I'll tell you what, though, the Dodgers are 12-2 this year in all of his 14 starts. They're 6-1 in his 7 home starts. So they have been cashing. Because a couple years ago, he was the best pitcher in baseball without a doubt. He still is. But remember when he was dominating a couple years ago, the Dodgers were losing a lot of those games.
He didn't get run support for like the first couple of years of his career. It was crazy.
But the bullpen's been strong this year, 2.1 ERA at home, so it definitely looks like the only way to play it, but I'm not going to lay -300 in the baseball game.
Yeah, and it's tough laying the run and a half on a run line with the home team, too. You're not getting that last at-bat, you know?
And the over-under is 7 in that game, so, I mean.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Even for fantasy person, we're going to talk about it. It's a lot like Russell Westbrook was on DraftKings, Steve. It's like, man, you got to spend $13,000 for the guy, but if you don't take him, you're missing out, but then your rest of your roster is kind of skewed because you spent so much, and Kershaw is so expensive. I think people should avoid him here this evening. All right, before we let you go, Steve, you mentioned the Boston Red Sox. You and I, you know, we speak every Monday, so we often talk about this and these teams being in these bad spots after these late Sunday night baseball games. And here we have the Boston Red Sox, an impressive 2-3 in the Lone Star State against the Houston Astros this weekend. And I know, you know, the Royals are flying under the radar, but you know this, Steve. The Royals have been playing better baseball over the last couple of weeks right now. Kansas City heating up 7-3 in the last 10. They're just 2 games under 500 right now. They're right in the hunt as far as the wild card pitcher is concerned. Hector Velasquez's second start. Meanwhile, Jason Hamill's been a lot better than his 3-6 record indicates. 3 straight great starts, ERA 2-2-1 in his last 3 starts.
Yeah, the Red Sox actually played Sunday night back-to-back weeks. Now, they played Detroit last Sunday night, and then they had to travel. They stayed at home and barely beat Philly 6-5 and then barely beat them 4-3 the next game. So, I mean, even though they won both games last week on Monday and Tuesday, you could definitely say that was a bit of a hangover because it wasn't very impressive against the worst team in baseball. Royals are finally heating up. We know they would eventually make a run. They've won 7 of their last 8, and their offense is what's really picked up. They've scored 7 runs or more in 5 of their last 7 games, or actually 6 of their last 8 now. And that's been the key. This was a terrible offensive team for the first 2 months of the season. Now they're hitting the ball. Bullpen's still not as good as it was during the World Series days a couple years ago, though. So the over could be worth a look here. I think both teams can put some runs up.
Yeah, it's a good point. The bullpen isn't the same. You know, it's interesting tonight, actually. There's a lot of teams I don't like. Like you mentioned, the Giants are terrible, but they're -130 tonight against the Braves. I like the Giants tonight, to pick on R.A. Dickey. Baltimore, I got some dangerous picks tonight, Steve. Baltimore Orioles are 3-7 in their last 10. I like them. The Giants suck tonight. I like them tonight. I'm taking the Brewers tonight. I don't see why Gerrit Cole is a favorite tonight. And the Astros are struggling a little bit, but Peacock's been great, and I like them tonight in Oakland, Steve.
Hey, look, the worst team in baseball still wins 50 to 60 games a year, you know? So, and the Giants are, what are they, like 26-49 now or something? I mean, so you do figure they're probably not really the worst team in baseball. So at some point they're going to run. But I always like to see teams show me something for a couple games. Kansas City is a perfect example. They were terrible. People kept thinking they turned things around in May. They did not. And now they've won 7 out of 8. They've offensively picked things up. So we talk about momentum in baseball over and over again, but you really don't want to try to catch a falling knife. You got to wait for these teams to bottom out, and just not sure the Giants have done that yet.
I've been waiting for the Blue Jays to go on a real run. They went on that run, and then they're back to who they were before again. Maybe there is no big run for the Jays coming this year.
Well, I think the Cardinals, speaking of birds, the Cardinals have been doing the same thing as well. You know, I think people keep thinking they're going to make a run, and they look like the Giants. They look like an over-the-hill team. Toronto, maybe, you know, Bautista continues to struggle. Everyone's waiting for him to turn it around. Maybe he's just not going to have it this year.
Steve Merrill, ProSportsInfo.com, one of the covers experts. Steve, we got to start talking football soon. I'm doing my own little look-aheads at each NFL team, season win totals. schedules, et cetera. I said the other day the Patriots will win over 12 and a half, and I hate saying that high of a number, but yeah. I don't see them losing four games. I said under 7.5 for the Miami Dolphins, and I'm hitting the Bills today. Me and Mark Lawrence began our conference preview, so you and I will have to start talking some football soon as well.
Yeah, and in fact, Mark Lawrence's annual should be on the newsstands here within the week if they're not already out there. And I did the college conference previews for him in that, so I'm looking forward to seeing that. And have already dug in pretty deep to college football. I need to start hitting the NFL now as well.
Yeah, good stuff. I look forward to it. We'll start talking some football with you next week, Steve. So, yeah, the playbook is going to be on newsstands June 27th at a newsstand near you, or obviously in a digital version online. Steve, it's always a pleasure, my man. Thanks for taking the time to be with us.
Thanks, Gabe.
There's Steve Merrill with us. Check him out at prosportsinfo.com. He's also one of the cover's experts. We've got George Kurtz ready to rock and roll. We'll talk some hockey. We'll talk some Major League Baseball DFS. And we'll talk some Buffalo Bill football a little bit later on. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. Let's bring in George Kurtz, Roto Experts, and let us also remind you that the Roto Experts Exclusive Edge Package is available now. It'll help you win your fantasy football league. Go to rotoexperts.com to get more information about this. It's a wealth of information, award winners, guys that have won a ton of money over the years, and you know, you're going to have a big advantage over your buddies that don't subscribe to the Roto Experts Exclusive Edge Package. And George Kurtz, Roto Expert. What's up, George?
How you doing, Gabe? Doing well?
Always a pleasure, my man. Always a pleasure. A lot of stuff to talk to. We're going to talk baseball from a DFS perspective, but also talk some hockey. Las Vegas Wednesday, they'll announce what they're doing. But let's start off with some baseball right now. And the big debate of the day really is to own or not to own Clayton Kershaw. And I just had Steve Merrill on, and we talked about the game from a betting perspective. And I said, there's no way in hell I'm laying minus 315 with Clayton Kershaw. I guess you could lay -1.5. Wheeler's on the hill tonight for the Mets. But you look at Kershaw's last couple of starts. You know, there's a lot of disturbing, just little telltale signs between the lines with Kershaw, in my opinion, George. And I'm sure you're noticing the same thing.
Yeah, some people believe that they could be masking an injury, not a major injury, but something that's going on with Kershaw there. I'm not so sure I buy that. It could just be midseason blues, you know? It's things are going well. Maybe he doesn't have the same adrenaline flowing here. I think he's fine as far as the Dodgers are concerned. I'm with you, though. DFS, 13,500 on DraftKings tonight. Probably not going in that direction here, but because that's just too expensive for me. My offense would be pretty cheap. I'd have to have Kershaw pitch a gem, and I don't know if I trust that yet.
All right, so you know, a guy that I've got my eye on tonight is Brad Peacock. And I think people keep on waiting for Peacock. Well, you know, I don't know. You know, the guy's reliever. I don't know. We'll see what happens. He's been damn consistent. In fact, they're lucky to have him when you consider all the injuries that they have right now. He's got a great strikeout rate, a great swing miss rate, playing in a pitcher's park tonight where, you know, what do you get, about an extra three to five to six outs without foul territory? Houston absolutely own the Oakland Athletics. I've got my eye on Peacock tonight.
I think he's a nice secondary starter there. I like him as well. One thing about the A's, you know, hey, as a Yankee fan, just found this out over the last four games. They'll hit a lot of home runs, but my God, they strike out a lot too. And in DFS, that's golden point per strikeout. Yep. I'll take that. I like Peacock as a secondary starter as well.
Yeah, that upset me. I had the Bombers yesterday. And I tell you, Oakland, they're a good home team. They just find a way of winning. And I always tell people, it's like the old Montreal Expo days, George. Remember, you know, players sort of get lulled to sleep. It's not the same. The stadium's kind of empty. The atmosphere is just different, except the other home team's used to playing like that. They're used to no one being there. They're used to the environment like that. And I noticed teams get lulled to sleep in Oakland. Used to happen in Montreal. And that's how Oakland, they punch you in the mouth when you go into that empty stadium.
It's the same when you watch a game. I enjoy watching games in better stadiums. You know, Camden, Fenway, fun stadiums. Oakland, it's a football stadium. It's for the Raiders. It's not meant for baseball. So, yes, I understand that. Where they're used to it, they don't care. But the opposing team comes in and sort of does get lulled to sleep.
You know, I saw something interesting the other day. Said once the Raiders leave, and finally, whatever that is, whenever they leave that stadium, we'll never see football on a baseball field again, like with the dirt infield and stuff. Yeah, I love that. And we had Drew Pearson talked about it, talking about the dirt on the infield. Said you got to use it to your advantage, man. And when you run the routes, that's an interesting thing that we'll never see again with the old football baseball hybrid stadiums. All right, so Anibal Sanchez gets called back up for the Tigers. Dude's been a gas can. Seems like the Mariners are sort of the obvious stack of the night tonight, George.
Yeah, I think you have to look in that direction. Sanchez, they go with Detroit's going with a six-man rotation this week. And what is tonight? That a throwaway game? I think you have to look at the Seattle Mariners. You have to look at Cano, you know, Nelson Cruz, Seager, the big guys here. And I might go for the smaller guys too here. I think if I am going to go Kershaw tonight, then I'm going to look at my Mariners for cheaper players. You know, maybe you have to go in that direction. Mitch Haniger, I'll look at him. It's Sanchez. He's done nothing now for a couple of years. I expect him to get lit up tonight.
What's your take on Dylan Bundy this evening? Corey Kluber versus Dylan Bundy tonight. The Cleveland Indians are starting to heat up. They've won five games in a row. I was just talking about it. They're like 21-6 or something like that in Kluber's last 27 starts. Kluber's actually a pretty good pitcher on the road as well. What do you make of this pitching matchup tonight? Do you like Kluber or do you like Bundy tonight?
Well, you have to like Kluber. Bundy, my worry about him has always been staying power. He seems to tire as the season rolls along. We're only in June right now. Last six starts, his ERA is 4.75. WHIP is 1.39. He seems to be, wilting a little bit, withering. He seems to be a pitcher that, for me, you know, getting a nice little 10-day, 15-day break, a mysterious elbow injury or maybe a shoulder injury wouldn't be a bad thing for him. I think he needs a break.
Garrett Cole on the hill tonight. He's been hit hard by lefties going into Miller Park. Obviously, it's a hitter's park here. What's your take on Garrett Cole tonight against the Brewers? And Thames is red hot right now again.
Garrett Cole has to be it's either him or Joe Ross that have been my most frustrating pitcher to own this season. I start them, they're terrible. I don't start them. No, they're great. But Garrett Cole, 6.15 ERA in his last six. You know, I wonder if he's worried about being traded. You know, we've heard this over and over again that Pittsburgh might move him by the deadline, can't afford him, that sort of thing. If that's playing into his head, Jose Quintana, same thing for me. He just hasn't been that pitcher. I am not starting him tonight in Miller Park, no. Can't do it.
I think Milwaukee beat him tonight, too. I was surprised. Pittsburgh are actually favorites. I mean, I think Milwaukee are going to beat him this evening. He's been hit hard by lefties. He's been hit hard on the road. He's been hit hard in this stadium before. It all adds up to me to liking the Brewers. Estrada's on the hill for the Jays tonight. He's surprising me. I've always been an Estrada fan, but in the past years, his strikeouts haven't been there. He's actually striking guys out right now, George. What's your take on Estrada tonight?
Last three starts, he's been a gas can. 17 runs, and now he's going to Texas in that ballpark. You know, no, thank you. It's going to be hot there. Ball's going to fly out of there, and the Rangers are hitting well. I do like, maybe he can win. It could be a slugfest. That wouldn't shock me here. The Blue Jays are hitting well as also, but no chance in hell that I'm starting Estrada tonight.
Yeah, you know, who's on the hill for the Rangers? Justin Bieber? Bieber something?
I can't even pronounce his name. And I know who you're talking about. That's the funny thing. Justin Bieber sounds good.
Yeah, no, Bieber Dirks or whatever the hell the guy's name is. Yeah, the over could be worth a look tonight in this game. All right, let's talk about a couple other hitters that you're looking at. You're taking a look at the Chicago Cubs?
Yeah, I like the Cubs tonight. I think they're going to put up some runs here. I'm a little worried about Chris Bryant. He's in a little bit of a slump here. And I'm getting so many questions about Rizzo. What about Rizzo batting first? He's hitting home runs. Who cares where he bats? People are worried about him losing RBI opportunities because obviously in the National League, the pitcher bats ninth. I don't care. He's hitting the ball out of the park. I'll take my chances. And let's face it, DFS, solo home run's still pretty good.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. Solo home run dependent. All right, so let's talk a little hockey here. Las Vegas expansion draft is going to go down on Wednesday. They're having it at the arena. It's a big deal. They're very excited in Las Vegas right now. I got to be honest with you, George. I'm not a fan of all this backroom dealings. Like, seems like there's no rules. Like, well, we're not going to, we're going to take this guy, but, you know, wink. We won't take him if you give us an envelope and this and some picks and... It's so shady, it seems to me, right? Like, so who even knows? And McPhee openly stated, I'm calling each general manager before I take a player, and I'm going to say, you can deal your way out of this if you want to.
He also said today is the last day that he will take offers for draft pick trades.
He's so today's it. He's like, you,
yeah. Yeah, but listen, And I you get so many people losing their minds over who your team's protected. I think Las Vegas might end up with 6, maybe 8 first-round picks. This is a weak NHL draft. I know they've made at least 3 deals already, and I think they have others. And it wouldn't shock me if they have 10 to 12 extra picks overall. I think so many teams – you look at the Islanders, for instance. They're all worried about Vegas taking Calvin DeHaan or Brock Nelson or Ryan Strome. When did these guys become stalwarts of your team that you're that worried about it? I mean, last I heard, Islanders aren't a Stanley Cup contender, but so many teams are like the Islanders or even better than the Islanders are all worried about guys who have third-line players being taken by Vegas. I don't get it, but I think Vegas is going to make out like bandits in this draft.
You know what they you know what if I would do is I was Vegas? Obviously, you jump on Marchessault. You're getting a 30-goal score for $750,000, and then you swing him and trade him to someone else and, you know, just gouge them for picks. Like, it's going to be interesting to see how McPhee does this. They've got some patience in Vegas, George. First pro sports team there. There's going to be some currency and a honeymoon. I think they're smart if they build for when the Raiders arrive. You know what I mean? It's everything's going to be fine now. You know, the Raiders are going to get there, then you have a problem. You want to be good when the Raiders get there. If you suck when the Raiders get there, you're going to have problems. So I think you have like a 3-4 year window where you can sort of build this team up. The Atlanta Thrashers took like 5 years. I think in their 6th year, they had 90 points, fifth and 6th year. So I think it could be done in about that span. But, George, it's always a pleasure, my man. We'll speak soon.
Take care, Gabe. You'll be good.
There's George Kurtz. I'll try. There's George Kurtz with us. And we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll talk about the Buffalo Bills. For better or worse, baby, bring it on. Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues, as does our National Football League team-by-team previews. If you weren't with us late last week, we're doing this team-by-team. We're starting out in the AFC East. I'm going in my predicted order of finish. We started off with the New England Patriots last week. I said over 12.5 wins for the Patriots. We did the Dolphins on Friday. I said under 7.5 wins for the Miami Dolphins, which leads us to the Buffalo Bills. As a full disclosure, I am a Buffalo Bill fan, all right? But I'm not a homer Buffalo Bill fan. I'm a realistic Buffalo Bill fan, but I'm a passionate Buffalo Bill fan. And I'm a happy Buffalo Bill fan that Rex Ryan is fighting with jackasses in Nashville bars right now, as opposed to trying to put together a winning football team, all right? The Bills were 8-8 and 7-9 in the 2 years with Rex. And I think that they won 15 games in the last 2 years, despite having Rex Ryan as their coach, not because of Rex Ryan. So really, they can only get better in all actuality. I'm dead serious about this. I don't think I can stress how incompetent I think Rex Ryan actually was. So the Buffalo Bills bring in Carolina Panthers defensive coordinator Sean McDermott. McDermott's never been a head coach before. So there are question marks, obviously. If you look back at his last 6 years with Carolina, the Panthers have always had a very aggressive defense. The Panthers have had one of the better defenses in the National Football League over the last couple of years. And, you know, thing with McDermott is I love this guy's attitude. And you can't judge a coach by him being mic'd up in minicamp. But you can just tell this guy gets it. He was an overachiever, smaller dude. He looks like Stone Cold Steve Austin. Smaller dude, played at William & Mary with Coach Tomlin. You know, the thing about Sean McDermott was he was a national champion wrestler in high school, prep wrestler. Tough kid, you know, tough dude. Tough guy. I like bringing in Rick Dennison, a Super Bowl champion offensive coordinator. I mean, it's another thing, too. Nate Hackett and Greg Romans were both terrible, all right? I like Dennison better in this situation. Now, as far as the numbers are concerned, the Buffalo Bills' regular season win total is 6.5. The Buffalo Bills are plus 1,100 to win the AFC East, and it's got to be a typo, right? Because even I love the Bills, you got to add a couple of zeros to this, guys. Who the hell would bet the Buffalo Bills to win the AFC East at 11-1? I wouldn't even bet this at 100-1. Like, if you gave me 1,000-1, I would take it. Like, the Buffalo Bills aren't winning the AFC East. Like, I don't know. I, like, how are you guys going to get any action on this? Who's stupid enough to do this? Really, it's ridiculous. The Buffalo Bills are 66-1 to win the Super Bowl. I wouldn't take the Bills to win the Super Bowl if it was 660-1, let alone 66-1. Like, really, are you guys trying to get any action? I mean, I love the Bills, and you ain't suckering me in at that 66-1. Now, let's talk about the win total of 6.5. One thing about the Buffalo Bills, and they are a laughing stock, and they are a joke, and I get it, and everyone makes fun of them all the time, but they're not terrible. Like, even with a dumbass like Rex Ryan, they were able to win 15 games over the last couple of years with bad offensive coordinating and a lot of injuries along the way. They're not a terrible football team. Let's talk about Tyrod Taylor. Unlike a lot of Buffalo Bill fans, I did not want to throw Tyrod Taylor under the bus. Tyrod Taylor has his deficiencies, but, you know, who we're going to replace him with. I do think that Nate Peterman could be the future quarterback of the Buffalo Bills. I think we could have stolen this kid out of Pitt in the fifth round. But with that being stated, Tyrod's the guy right now. Now, don't forget, Dennison, before he was in Denver, was in Baltimore when Tyrod Taylor was there. He likes Tyrod Taylor. And it's one of the reasons why Whaley's gone. McDermott and Dennison stood up for Tyrod Taylor. And Whaley wanted to get rid of Tyrod Taylor. So Tyrod knows that the coaching staff that are there has confidence in him. Tyrod's a solid fantasy quarterback. He throws a great deep ball. We know about his mobility. Problem with Tyrod Taylor is, even though he throws a good deep ball, his intermediate ball is very inaccurate. He can't read defenses, and he panics when he gets blitzed. Now, I was disappointed in Tyrod last year with his football IQ that he didn't get better. And anybody that's ever gone to a Buffalo Bills game, like our boy Cameron 2 Drew has noticed there's a million wide receivers open all the time, and he can't see them. Now, to his defense, he hasn't had an arsenal of weapons to work with yet. Let's look at what they've done. I love the draft pick of Zay Jones. Listen, Andre Holmes, nobody really knows about this dude. He's been the star of the Buffalo Bills camp, man. Big body, 6'4". He's showing leadership. He's showing size. He might be an impact player for the Buffalo Bills. Hopefully Jones isn't like a cream puff like Watkins. It has always hurt because Jones is already banged up. But I like the skill position players. The Buffalo Bills offensive line has been greatly improved over the past couple of years, so much so that they were a number one team rushing the football last year. The Buffalo Bills rushed for 164 freaking yards a game last year, guys, all right? And I would expect the commitment to the run to continue with the new coaches. So LeSean McCoy's a hot fantasy running back. I get it. I'm always worried about him getting injured. But I would expect the Buffalo Bills to run him into the ground. I would expect that the Williams kid out of Arkansas, if he can stop getting arrested, will get some opportunities as well. I like the defense, guys. I think the Buffalo Bills have a lot of talent on the defensive side of the football. This Trey White kid out of LSU's a freaking steal. Late first-round steal. He's already worked his way up to the top of the depth chart. And let us not forget, the Buffalo Bills defense was great when they were playing a 4-3 scheme under Jim Schwartz. And that stupid idiot, Rex Ryan, came in, Mr. Know-It-All, changed our scheme, and our defense sucked. We couldn't get any pressure on the quarterback. We got the ball run down our throat. Sean McDermott is not going to let 133 yards a game on the ground. That's not going to happen on this guy. Not on Austin's watch, it isn't. That's not happening. I love the fact that we've switched the scheme up here. The Buffalo Bills have a ton of talent on the defensive side of the football. The Bills can be a competitive football team. Yeah, they lost Gilmore. Okay. I think Trey White's going to be every bit as good as Gilmore. There might be some growing pains, but I've always thought that Gilmore was a little bit overrated anyways. Darby's a stud on the other side of the field. I love the signing of Micah Hyde. People are forgetting about the Micah Hyde signing from Green Bay. Brings some veteran presence and leadership at the safety position back there. Now let's get into the Buffalo Bills schedule. It's not easy. They play five teams that were in the playoffs last year, but they do open with the New York Jets. So that's a win. They're going to be able to get a win at home against the Jets. And if you look at the schedule here, guys, look what's interesting about this. What do you notice about that? At Carolina, Denver, and Atlanta. You know the Buffalo Bills are playing all four teams that were in the last two Super Bowls this year, including the Patriots twice. Carolina, Denver, and Atlanta. That's three of the four teams that were in the Super Bowls. Buffalo Bills at Carolina. I'm going to get saucy here, guys. I'm calling an upset win. We raided the Carolina Panthers coaching staff. The Buffalo Bills coaching staff knows everything about Carolina. They don't know everything about the Buffalo Bills. I think the Buffalo Bills could win that football game. I think the Buffalo Bills could beat Denver in week three. And I think the Buffalo Bills will get murdered by the Atlanta Falcons. So, you know, I look at the first four games of the Bills here, and I'm like, man, you know what? The Bills could be three. They could really be, you know, 2-1 going into this Atlanta game, you know, or they could be 1-2. Like, you know, you look at the Bills, it's sort of all over the place. They get that bye week in the middle there versus Tampa, versus the Raiders, winnable games in Buffalo at the Jets. Where it gets difficult for the Bills again is the four of their last five games of the season are against the New England Patriots and the Miami Dolphins. Now, the Bills historically have played well against the Dolphins. And, of course, that jackass Rex Ryan. Can I stress enough how happy I am that Rex is gone? Way to punt the ball, Rex. Rex Ryan punting the ball in that game last year is like a guy on death row refusing his last meal. Something we know that Rex Ryan's never freaking done. Four of their last five games are against the Dolphins and the Pats. One of those home games in early December against the Colts is going to be a real key to whether the Bills can get over 6.5 wins. But I'll tell you what, I think they do. I think they squeeze it out, and the Buffalo Bills can be 7-9 this year. Maybe 8-8, but 7-9 wins us the bet. My early lead, Buffalo Bills tie for second place with the Miami Dolphins with 7-9 records. Buffalo Bills over 6.5. Game time decisions continues. All right, it's time for our plays of the day. Let's start off with the Baltimore Orioles. This is a dangerous pick, man. Kluber's been on fire as of late. Dylan Bundy has not been. But I can't pass up the Baltimore Orioles plus 155 on their home field. I also can't pass up, despite how terrible the San Francisco Giants are, and they are, R.A. Dickey's worse, all right? So give me the Giants in this spot. Speaking of bad, man, Garrett Cole's been a freaking gas can as of late. Guy gets killed by left-handers, he gets killed on the road, and he's in Milwaukee tonight. I don't understand why Pittsburgh are favored. Give me the Milwaukee Brewers at plus 110 as home dogs. Brad Peacock, Houston Astros lost 2-3 against the Boston Red Sox. They're in Oaktown tonight. I like Peacock in the pitcher's park. And Annabelle Sanchez, speaking of gas cans, give me the Seattle Mariners other night. You're on your own, may the winners be yours.